Welcome back to The Drop. This is the contest edition, and shortly I'm going to be joined by Stace Galbraith, a man whose voice you've probably heard a lot over the past week at Margaret River, and we are going to break down everything that happened in the final event before the cut. And as you probably saw, there was a lot of carnage and a lot of really incredible moments too, so let's drop in. Stace Galbraith, the George Pitar of surf commentating, comes in as a wild card and just takes on number one. And congratulations. That was an incredible Kelly interview.
Oh, thank you, Mikey. I can't take all the credit. I definitely had a lot of help with that one. Probably the most Kelly moment of all time, as far as like him kind of not saying he was going to retire, but there was a few things in there that made you feel like he was for sure retiring. But yeah, the R word didn't exactly come out though, did it?
No, it's so funny. If you were to like read a transcript of that, it's the most, you can just see the human condition in just one space, right? Like, it's just, I don't know. I feel so bad for him because I'm sure there's a big part of him that wants to have this, you know, big moment where everybody comes around him and celebrates, but he also just can't give it up, can he?
He even said that. He's like, I mean, again, he didn't specifically say that, but he came in and broke down the heat and it was just like, oh, are we really doing this? Like, you're telling me with 5 minutes to go, you had priority, you know, whatever he said, you know, I was just listening to him going, fuck, I'm kind of like, feels like he's talking like he just lost a semi and could have made a final. You know what I mean? Like, not that he's just been eliminated in the round of 32 and, like, this could be the end.
Even the fact that he went ahead and hired Micro to be his coach in his last event before the cut just goes to show you how badly he didn't want to leave the tour. Like, can you imagine that? The guy has 11 world titles. He's 52 years old. He's been competing on the CT for 30 years. And at this point, he's like, oh, fuck, I really got to figure something out. I'm going to hire Micro.
Yeah, well, I guess they got on at Bell's and he just wanted to keep the fun going into Margie's. And yeah, I get it, because there's probably never more pressure on Kelly and he probably wanted someone to bounce ideas off and kind of even almost like a bit of a distraction, you know, like someone to play golf with, someone to talk about surfing with and not just talk about, because every other conversation he would have been having with every other person, like, you know, third party media and just people on the street and everything, would be around, you know, what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? So yeah, I don't know, to have someone like Micro in your corner, just keeping it real, I reckon that would be a pretty good call, I reckon. Not so much for the surfing or strategy, but more just someone to just have around that's kind of can understand it.
Yeah, agreed. Well, anyway, I thought you did an amazing job that whole event. You were seriously getting the most interesting things out of surfers who normally wouldn't say a goddamn thing on the glass. So the fact that you don't have a full-time job doing that blows my mind, but you have about 4 full-time jobs, so I guess you don't need another.
Thank you, Mikey. I have a hell time doing it. I'll give you the red hot tip right now if that doesn't come across already.
Yes. Well, it certainly came across that way as well on the TV. But it is now time for us to break down what actually happened across 7 competition days in Western Australia. Is that, first of all, is that some sort of record?
I think 8 was the record. I think we had been talking about that once we got to 5, and I think 8 was the record, because there was a chance we were going to run heats on the Saturday afternoon and we didn't, and then we obviously ran a big day on the Sunday. So I think 7 has been done before, but never 8, which we didn't get to 8, which is, I love breaking records, so that was a real shame. But yeah, that would have been hard for you to watch, right?
Oh, it was hard for us to watch. I'd imagine it was even harder for Tim Hawken, who had to write the comp rap pieces. And I would imagine it was even harder for the people there like you who were working, and probably maybe even the hardest for the surfers, many of whom were fighting against the cut line. So yeah, it wasn't great as a viewing experience, but I also can sympathize with all of you people over there who were just trying to do your best to make sure this thing finished in some decent waves, which of course it did.
Because the weather and the waves were actually so fun everywhere else around the town, and I don't want to get too kiss-arsy here, but the Red Bull Athlete Zone, hands down the best
plug,
the best zone on the planet. Like, it's ice bath, sauna, overlooking main break. The surfers use it in the morning after a free surf, but then in the afternoon, no one's down there. So me, Rich and Ron were just absolutely milking the therapy sessions. And yeah, I didn't mind the half days. Long live the half day.
Yeah, I bet that would be nice over there. All right, well, anyway.
But on the subject of the athletes, though, like, it's not something that you really would, I think, is a selling point for the sport, but, man, they do such a good job to, like, get psyched up for a heat. Okay, we're not on today. Like, all right, we might be on tomorrow. No, we're going to be off for 2 days. Like, that is just, there's no other sport like it that I can think of. Like, that is just such a hard way to compete and do your job.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and we saw that some people were able to manage that, others not so much. One person who managed it really well was, again, I brought this up in the beginning in a reference to Stace, but George Pitar, his second wild card in two events. He did well enough in Bells to get the WSL's interest, and he got a second one here, came in and took some scalps, including world number one, Griffin Colapinto. On the betting front, I was loving George. I was putting money on him every heat, and he kept providing. Stace, I think they removed, correct me if I'm wrong, I think they removed the rule where you can qualify or make the cut as a wild card. So George wouldn't have anyway with the points that he got, but say he went on to win Margies, he would not have been able to qualify for the back half of the tour and into 2025. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, you can't qualify as a wild card anymore. Sorry, Mikey Wright. Sorry, Baron Mamiya. No more of those stories.
What are your thoughts on that, though? Like, if you can come in, this guy's surfed two events, and he's looked like one of the best surfers in both of them. He's, again, taken out world number one. Like, if he's able to prove himself on that level, why should he not get a spot?
Yeah, I think that he should, yeah, to answer your question. Like, if anyone can come on like that, you know, like Baron did, ninth into a first, or if George, say he went, you know, even a ninth into a third or whatever results he got through Australia, you know, had it done just a little bit better and made enough points to make the cut, then why not? Like, there's enough drama and enough storylines as it is, but then you sprinkle something like that on top. The other thing too, which I think I could understand the other perspective of it, and that people, if they don't support the system, like a Jay Davies or a, you know, to a lesser extent, Dane, when he didn't do many comps there for a few years, that sort of seems unfair. Like, someone that's not really trying to qualify, then they get like a wild card because it's their local spot or something like that, and they go on to do well. I think that's a little bit strange. But someone like George, he's like campaigned on the QS, he's made it onto the Challenger Series, he's top 20 on the Challenger Series. It's not like he's not trying to use the pathways to get to the tour. So why cut him off if he does well as a wild card? It just, yeah, it does seem a bit odd for sure.
Yeah, like, it's so strange that he's going to be going to Snapper next week, and like, he could lose first round, like, because it's just such a different system, right? Like, surfing those four-man heats, it's a completely different ball game. Like, you could put a decent number of the surfers in the top 10 on the CT on the Challenger Series, and they might not necessarily qualify. Like, it's just really that hard. Regardless of how good of a surfer you are, you got to do it in a crazy range of conditions against a really talented field. And in any given heat where there's four men, like, there's just not enough waves to go around to make it really based on, like, performance. It's the Challenger Series, when it comes down to it, they're mostly wave-catching competitions through the early rounds.
If you can get through those first two heats, it then becomes a contest. But before then, it is just got to have luck on your side, and you've got to be, you know, really, really tuned into where the best waves are. And, you know, if you think you can outsurf your competitors on the inferior waves, which is what catches a lot of the good surfers off on the Changers, they get on and they think, oh, I can just outsurf this person, but it's not the case. You still need to be on the better waves, and four person heats, yeah, that's really hard to do.
Yeah. So anyway, George was part of a big judging fiasco in the Bells event. That was not the case in Margaret's. However, the judging stuff, it doesn't sleep. I think people honestly just love getting mad about things is really where it comes from, just a natural human instinct. And it also so happens that Gabriel Medina happens to be involved in these more often than not. Whether that's more of a commentary on his fan base or the way that things are actually playing out, I'll leave that up to the listener. But yeah, Gabby Medina lost a really close heat to John John. A lot of people, even internally at Stab, thought that it probably should have gone the other way. In fact, as a result of this, we are going to be working on a story about buzzer beaters because, at least to me, anecdotally, it does feel like you are more likely to get the score if you catch a wave close to the end of the heat than if you were to catch that same wave in the middle of the heat. But we want to get some stats to either back that up or completely debunk it. So we're working on that story right now. But just for this, just for the people on the pod, Stacey, John or Gab, who won that heat?
Wow. In the moment, I thought John did enough. I didn't think that Gabriel's first 5.83 was all that strong. And when the score came in, I was not surprised at all. Then I went home and watched the heat and thought, oh, that's closer than I thought. And then I thought, well, it can't be much closer than that because he needed a 6.6 and got a 6.9. And I thought, well, that seems like the result to me. Yeah, no, it's just a close heat. And I think that, like you said, for whatever reason, Gabriel just seems to be in there more often than not, which is, it's probably a testament to his surfing. Like, people step up when they surf against him and, yeah, whatever else you want to put it down to. But yeah, in the moment, on the stairs, watching all four waves, I did think John had done enough. Just based on the backups, I didn't think, there wasn't a doubt in my mind that Gabriel had the single best wave of the heat. That's what I thought, and I just thought it came down to the second scores.
Yeah, there was a comment on the site this week also that I really agreed with. I forget who said it, sorry, but they said that they feel like there's been a trend lately of judges sort of like screwing up the scale early in a heat and then having to correct later on. So like, you see one wave and it gets one score, and then you see another wave that's maybe like really close to it in quality, but the scores are quite different. And I couldn't agree with that more. I feel like sometimes the judges just like throw out a number and then they throw out another number and they're like, oh shoot, we either overshot it or undershot it. And now we need to, you know, in the surfer's next wave, we either need to give them a little bit more, a little bit less, which is kind of infuriating and confusing as a viewer. But if you really boil it down, the judge's job is to make sure that the right person wins the heat. And so long as they're getting that, it kind of, like, it does affect the way that a heat plays out. So I can't say it doesn't matter because it changes the psychology of how everything works. But I don't know, at the end of the day, they need to make sure the right person gets through. I think they're doing that a vast majority of the time, even on those close ones. But again, it's just, it's fun to talk about these judging things.
What did you think of that heat?
Yeah, I think I've reached a point now, I don't know what happened to me, like, I used to get, even with like betting, you'd think I'd be more passionate about these things, but I've reached a point where it's just, surfing is so subjective. To think that I have like the objective right viewpoint on these decisions that are clearly very close for a, you know, a bunch of nuanced reasons is insane. So I kind of just take a back seat at this point.
Welcome. Welcome. How good does it feel?
Yeah.
Oh, the peace that I found once I started acting like that was just immense. So, yeah, I want to continue to live in that place. And although I probably have the right to have an opinion given that I was there and I watched it, I still watched it go down and I don't think my heart rate got above fucking 80 beats. Like, I was fine. I was like, whoever wins this heat is going to be stoked and whoever loses is going to be furious, and it does not matter which way this goes. And I could argue either side, I thought, watching that heat. I was like, if I needed to, I could feel fine about either winner.
You know what else was, I think, a really key factor, and Tim Hawken astutely pointed this out in his comp wrap, is that John is such a non-claimer that when he does claim, it actually has an impact, probably on the judges' minds, or at least in the audience minds. So the fact that John claimed that wave really made you think like, oh, it must have been pretty good, actually. Like, if John's excited about it, you know, it's like the opposite of the boy who cried wolf.
I'll throw another one in there that I think, you don't want to include this in the stats because it's too hard to find, but I think that selling a surfer on the prior wave to get your priority to chase the score adds like a point to the next wave.
Ooh. Yeah, I could see that.
Do you know what I mean? You can feel the momentum, like, okay, they need to do this and then they need to get the wave. So they've kind of got this like ladder that they need to climb before they even get there. So it might even be as simple as if someone gets a wave with like 3 minutes to go, well, you can like chalk out 90 seconds because they've got to get the jet ski and paddle. It's okay. So first they've got to do that. Then they've got to get out the back and sell them and get priority back, but not sell them too hard on the first wave because then they don't want to be out of position. So they've got to make sure they get the surfer to commit to the wave, but then also stay on the spot. Then there's going to be 10 seconds left. And oh my God, what are they going to do? If they just get to the end of that wave, I swear to God, they're getting the score.
It's true. Or in the flip scenario, if you're Seth Moniz, you get a wave under priority. I feel like the judges like that as well. What it comes down to is people like an underdog story. If you can come from behind and win, people love that, regardless of who you are or what your position is. Like, it just is exciting. Like, that's what competition is all about, are those moments of surprise and shock at the end when you, against all odds, turn it back in your favor. So I think this is very basic human emotion driving a lot of these decisions, but that is what we're going to find out with this piece where we're studying the stats.
Can't wait to read it.
Yep. So as a result of that third round loss, Gabriel Medina is now 19th in the world. He did make the cut, which was actually a concern, which is crazy. And that's really weird. Like, I mean, I thought for sure Gabby was going to be in the top five. It is still possible. Everybody within the men's top 22, as it sits now, is within 6,000 points of the cut line. Actually, strike that. Within 5,000 points of the cut line. So that's, you know, basically half of an event win. There's four events left. So Yagodora, who's sitting 22nd in the world right now, say he goes and gets a good result in Tahiti, he wins Brazil, he does okay in El Salvador, and he gets a semi in Cloudbreak, he could very well still find himself in that top five picture. Obviously, the same is true of Gabby. And again, this is like the craziest thing ever. The top-rated Brazilian surfer still is outside of the top 15. Italo Ferreira is currently 16th in the world, and above him is not a single Brazilian. Again, we have to factor in that Felipe Toledo didn't surf this year. You would have to assume that he would be in there just based on the fact that he has won the past two world titles. But yeah, it seems as though we've actually entered into a new era. I was skeptical after the first two events and people started talking about it. I was like, oh no, it's just, you know, an anomaly. It's a couple events. But now we're five events in and there's only three Brazilians left on tour and none of them are anywhere close to the top five.
Yeah, that's a wild one. It's sort of how dynasties work, I guess. Still not going to say that it's done. Like, I still feel like Gabriel's looking really sharp. A couple of big lefts coming up. Have to wait and see. Yago's been a bit of a sleeper. I thought we would have seen a bit more than him, a bit more out of him so far this year. But yeah, like you said, you could bring it home really strong. You see that on the tour, like Seth Moniz gets even a fifth, took him from like 24th to 14th just in one go. And then he made one more heat and went up only one spot. So it's like you said, it's quite condensed at the top, and it doesn't take a massive result, like even a win, to just get you back up to say that top 10 zone. And then if you know you get on a bit of a roll, you could get inside the top five from there. So yeah, I'm not going to count him out. That'd be a pretty big call. But yeah, it's definitely been a slow start for him.
All right, well, now we've got to move over to the side of the women's. First and foremost, congratulations to Sawyer Lindblad. Did you see this young rookie making it all the way to the finals to secure her spot on tour for 2025?
So good. No, I cannot. Until she got that left against Betty Lou Sakura Johnson. When she got that wave, I was like, whoa, there's something special going on here, and she's going to be a real chance. And just kept the ball rolling. But until she got that wave, I hadn't really thought to myself that it was possible for her to pull it off. But man, she nearly won the whole thing. And that's like the greatest thing about the cut. Similar to Seth Moniz, like they can both say how shit it is, which it is tough if you're the athlete on that side of the cut line. But as a viewer, and then as like a personal kind of driver for them, they stepped up, and Sawyer in particular, like that was crazy for her to come all the way from way downtown, 16 or 15, to qualify is crazy.
Yeah, and this is, so in 2022, we saw two female surfers make the final to requalify for the tour, and we saw the same thing in 2024. So Sawyer Lindblad, as we just mentioned, again, young rookie, still in her teens, hadn't really had a good result up until this event, and they just came and stormed the castle. And Gabrielle O'Brien, who was also in that 2022 final alongside Isabella Nichols, the first time Gabby got second place. This time she won, and she won in unbelievable fashion. You couldn't even dream up the idea of having dolphins in a wave that you get one of your keeper scores for in your first CT win. Like, that was just freaking unbelievable. Did you watch that live?
Yeah, that was crazy. That was like, from where we were watching it from, it looked like she actually like snapped on the head of one of the dolls.
She pretty much did. Nuts. And you could tell it like fully freaked
pretty
her out.
Pretty much did.
Yeah, it was like, and it would have anybody, because that was like, they were so close. And I just, it brings that Connor Coffin wave at the box to mind, but this was even crazier. I mean, obviously the box was an earlier wave, but the fact that she was turning like inches away from these things was fucking, like, I would have fallen for sure.
Yeah, big time. And like, yeah. The fact that, yeah, like you said, she got to keep that as a score in the final and then go on to win the thing doesn't get any better than that.
And how is that foam climb? I thought she was going to, on her second wave, I thought she was like going to kick out after she did. She like kind of overfaded the first bottom turn, was a little late to the first section. And then the wave was basically just closing out at that point. And I was like, oh, bummer. She's going to just want to kick out. And then she just goes straight through and over the lip with the thing and comes down and just gets completely enveloped by whitewater and pops out like nothing happened.
Man, that was crazy. Again, like watching that from the stairs, you're watching it going, there's no way she's going to be able to get a board up there. She's going to have to jump off, and then gets up over it and it comes down and just absolutely rides out of it like it was nothing. Like, that was just illegal. Should have been a fall for any other normal human. That was crazy.
Yeah. So congratulations to Gabrielle O'Brien. Also congratulations to Adrian Hellman. He is a pod listener. He is a fellow surf bettor, and he made a $50 bet on Gabrielle O'Brien at the beginning of the event to win. Obviously, as an outside shot, I think he had like 1-31 odds or something like that. He ended up taking home like $1,500. So congratulations to Adrian. That is freaking well punted. I hate to bring it up, Stace, but yours truly also picked Gabrielle O'Brien. I know I wasn't on the pod, but I think Shane might have picked her as well.
Well, you might have. That's right. You might have got a telepathic message to Uncle Shano, because he picked Gabriella in your absence, and you guys all did well there to pick her. A great pick.
Yeah, and I didn't realize it, but I obviously skipped Bells because I was off in New Zealand just like not paying attention at all. But so that means I've bet on 4 events this year, men and women. I've picked 7 of 8 winners thus far. It's really odd. So I made another, I mean, we're already kind of like verging into gamble ramble just naturally, but I made $900 in this event. And for the year, I'm up like 4,800 something on betonline.ag. So I agree with Stace, like this, it doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem like it can continue, but I keep telling myself that and then I keep winning. So I don't really know what to do at this point other than keep betting.
You know what the best attack, you know what the best defense is, Mikey.
It's a good offense. Oh, I just want to get to the end of the year with something left in my account. That's the goal. But you have to bet responsibly. So if you're doing it with me, you can always get my picks online on stabmag.com. We're betting on betonline.ag, and it's all for fun. So anyway, Stacey, we have buried the lead here, but it's now time to get into it. The men's final, John Florence versus Jack Robinson. And we're not just talking about John Florence. We're talking about John Florence of old. John Florence, who is not just out there competing, but he's fucking surfing. Like, what he did in that semifinal, and you could just tell the mindset that he was in, because, you know, he got that one. He did that giant turn on the 8.4 you asked him about. He got a couple other great scores, and then he basically had nothing to lose, so he just went for broke on that 10. And yeah, I mean, truly, 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 like on that level of John that you're just like, wow, how is he even a human? And then coming up against Jack Robinson, who has an uncanny ability to always match the level of the person that he's surfing against, is what I think Jack's superpower is.
For sure. I think the best thing about that John semi was Taj Burrow commentating it from the booth. Like, I just thought that was such a good like dynamic to have, like John at his best, Ronnie Rich Taj breaking it all down. Thought that was amazing. And then yeah, the final was insane. And how Jack just has that ability. I don't know if it's something that like John Florence necessarily thinks about, or but the only way that Jack does win that final is by going to the air. And I think that John could definitely disarm that, but it just didn't look like he was ever looking for that at the start of the wave. I mean, he kind of went there once Jack went there, which was the same thing as 2 years ago, But yeah, it was an insane final, and both of those guys absolutely ripping.
It's got to be so hard for John to swallow because he's so clearly the best surfer out there. Like, I mean, the fact that he has 51 excellent scores at Margaret's alone, and I mean, that's across not that many events, not certainly not 10 events. So he's getting at least 5 per event. Like, it's just, it's an unfathomable number. And you just see it when he's out there and he's on a good wave. Nobody even comes close. However, John's fatal flaw is, besides potentially not recognizing that he needed to go to the air to beat Jack, is that he cannot take his foot off the gas. And when he gets on a flat section, he gets a little bit ahead of himself. He gets a little bit on his front foot because he just wants to keep that speed that he has going into the turn. But the wave's not pushing back against him in a way that allows him to open up how he wants to. And I think that he gets a little bit stuck where others, like even Jack, who's pretty heavy footed, he has the ability to go light when he needs to. And I think that that's a big difference as well, because if you're not going to be on the best waves, which John was certainly not in the final, you need to be able to adapt to them. And to me, it just looked like he was trying to use brute force on every single section, where I think sometimes he needs to figure out how to find that little balance of, you know, push and pull.
Yeah, for sure. And it's, yeah, again, it's like a credit to Jack as well. He just finds a way of getting the better, bigger waves and just execute great surfing on them. Like, it's man, he's got such a good habit of doing that. He's up to 7 CT victories. He's only 1 behind John. That is, like, a really big stat.
And he's had all of those victories since John's last victory. John hasn't won an event since 2020. Jack has won, is, I don't know if it's 7 or maybe 6 in that time, which is just insane. Like, I understand that, you know, maybe he's past his peak or whatever, but he's still John. And the fact that Jack has won 7 in that time is crazy, but it goes to show that, one, Jack is one of the most clutch performers in surfing. Like, when he gets into a final, he's, I think, got a 70% chance of winning, maybe a little bit more than that, which is, like, if you can maintain that sort of level, that's, like, Felipe is kind of, like, near that, or at least he was early on in his career. So if you can maintain that sort of level, you're basically bound to be a champion, because when you're doing your best surfing, or at least your best competing at the podium end of events, you're kind of unstoppable. And that's what he did, because he looked good all event, you know, especially he was like always like finding tubes and stuff, but he squeaked through that heat with Seth Moniz. And then he came up against John, where it was so clear that he was going to need to hit a new level. And it's like he just knew that and just immediately clicked into it. Like, he's just got such a strong mind when it comes to these things.
Yeah, it's next level. And just, he just knows how to, like, be crafty and knows what game plan he's going to go with. And, like, you know, he hadn't done air like that all comp, and it was windy all comp. You know, it wasn't like the first time there'd been air sections on waves like that. And yeah, he just knows how to bring it out. Like you said, he's a master when it comes to finals. Philippe was 7 from 8 finals. He won his first 7 in a row. And Jack's got a similar thing going. I know he's actually had a second a bit earlier on in his career than Philippe did. But like you said, if he keeps that going throughout his whole career, he's going to have similar stats to Philippe in finals, which is nuts.
Yeah. And again, like, sure, lowers doesn't suit him. If it's really, really good lowers, he has a chance. Same as John at really, really good lowers has a chance. But the WSL finals is not always going to be at lowers. So the system is a bit funny in that your whole year is really predicated by one location, and you have to work really hard to get there and then, you know, hope for the waves to be right on that one day. It's I'm sure really daunting psychologically on a lot of these surfers, but I'm sure Jack will be in that conversation this year. Looking at the standings, I'm sure John will be as well. Right now, the top 3 surfers, Griffin, Jack, and John, are pretty well ahead of everyone else. Like, for instance, John's at 23,000 points, and 5th place, Jordy Smith, is at 16,900 points. So there's a really big gulf right there. The one question for John, he's coming into a back half of the year. It's not even a half of the year, technically. It's 4 events compared to the 5 events up front. However, it will be the same amount of events that you'll be counting as scores, because you drop 1 in the first 5. But in the last 4 events, he has, you'd have to think, actually, all 4 events kind of suit him. Like, he's done really well in Brazil before. Tahiti and Cloudbreaker, obvious ones. And then El Salvador. We haven't seen El Salvador good yet, but if El Salvador got good, I'm sure John would be great out there as well. The one question mark, though, is John's wife is due to have a baby in the next month or two. So the question is, will he be able to surf all of these events? Speaking on Felipe, I think he missed the birth of both of his first two children to surf and CT events, which I know is really, really hard for him. I don't know if John would make that same decision. And if he were to miss an event, or maybe two would be brutal, but if he was to miss one event, that could be really, really tough considering all four of those events count in your scoreline.
Yeah, for sure. The back half of the year is so condensed and counting all results is tricky. But life's got a funny way of just dealing you these things and you figure it out. If anyone can do it, it's definitely John. But I don't really like that about the tour, I will say, how you drop a result to start the year but not at the back half. It just seems, I don't know, it just seems a little tough.
I mean, it seems fine to me, because what it does is I think it makes the cut process a little bit more fair. So it like gives people one shitty event to throw away, but then back half of the year, it's all gas, no brakes. Like you got to be on to, I don't know. To me, it all lines up fine.
But if you've got like a niggle or something you need to get sorted, like, I don't know, it just seems a bit tough. And the front half of the year is tough too. Like the tour's never been more condensed. You chuck an Olympics in the middle there. Like I could tell you firsthand, these crew are just soaking up every minute they can at home. It's a fast year for sure.
Yeah. It's brutal, especially like, yeah, the ISA World Games as well. So they did take J-Bay off the schedule, which freed up all of, I believe, July or June. I forget which one. But so they did remove one event. But yeah, looking at the schedule of all the events they have to compete in this year, if they want to be like Olympic eligible, etc., it's pretty much nonstop from the start in Hawaii, which I would imagine is a pretty tough existence for just about anybody, especially somebody who's expecting their first child. But yeah, I hope it works out. I really want to see John in the final five. Right now, I mean, Griffin, Jack, John, Ethan, that top four, can't fault it. Jordy's in number five right now, who, I mean, of course he's Jordy. He's like, you know, one of the pretty much the best ever to most talented surfers to be on tour and maybe not quite reach their potential, I would say. Like, he had a great career, but I don't think Jordy would feel like he did what he could have with his ability. Do I think Jordy will be there at the end of the year? It's quite possible, actually. He's gotten pretty good in left-hand tubes, El Salvador. He will slap you if you try to say it's as good as J-Bay, but he would also probably still say it's a really fun wave, and he's done well in beach breaks before, so it's possible. I still have a dream that Gabriel Medina is going to go on a wild killing rampage at the end of the year and win like three of the last four events or something, but I don't know, we'll see.
Yeah, I back in that wild rampage. I still do. I picked Gabby to win Margaret River, and I still think that I'll be picking him a lot more towards the end of this year. So I think there's a rampage coming. He just looks too gnarly. He's training the house down. He's surfing great. He's due. He's overdue.
Yep. You know what they say, Stacey? Even a broken clock is right twice a day, so keep betting on Gabby and you will probably win eventually.
I will write that one down.
All right, so anything else from Margaret River? You were on the ground. I mean, surely you would have seen and heard a couple things that didn't make the webcast that would be interesting to podcast listeners.
You know what? I was thinking about this a lot, and it's hard to say. I have the webcast in my ear all day, kind of like a live podcast. So that's pretty interesting to listen to. And I would say that it was all on display. Like, Kelly, I think, didn't really pull any punches, like, compared to what we're used to. Like, yeah, he was a bit smoke and mirrorsy, but he was, like you said, if you read just between the lines, you can tell what he's thinking and where his head's at. And I think the league was pretty open too in like saying that what wild cards they're going to offer him. Whereas last year, it was all behind closed doors. Like, we all knew that he was going to get the seasonal wild card, but it hadn't really been confirmed. Whereas this year, it's like Jesse Marley-Dyer's got on the broadcast and it's kind of gone, you know, we're going to offer him Tahiti if he wants it, Fiji if he wants it, and he's applied for it. So put two and two together, I think we're going to see him at those locations. And then yeah, he might even surf Snapper is one thing that I don't know if he said that on the broadcast or not, but yeah,
he did say that, but looking at the forecast, I don't know, it's not looking like especially inviting. I mean, it's your home turf. You'd probably know better, but it looks like it might be similar to last year.
Oh, if we're lucky. It doesn't love the south direction up here. It doesn't really get in, so it needs to come around a bit more east. And even at 2 foot, it's still fun, but it needs to be straight into the bank, not going past it. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, as far as like a retirement goes from Kelly, like maybe from full-time competing, but we're definitely going to see more of him for sure.
Okay, two more questions. One, they didn't pan over once, from what I recall, on finals day, but how good was the box?
Really good every 30 minutes. Like, every so often you'd look up and go, whoa, there's a crazy one. The one thing I would say was that the wind didn't come up as early as what we were all thinking, so that kind of let it stay really fun pretty much all day, like till about 1 o'clock. I think there needs to be some sort of consideration there for, I don't know, the world would probably start lighting stakes, but run two comps, main break in the box. You could do it simultaneously. Like, there's enough waves. It's just such a good part of the world. There's so many waves. I mean, we ran heats at bloody Southside, for crying out loud. The left off Southside on the final day was roping. Like, ever since I'd seen people out there in a CT, I couldn't kind of keep my eye off it. Like, oh, I wonder if we could run over there. And you for sure could. You could have three banks going. It was, you could do a full ISA club round day. Just heats everywhere. Box, main break, south side. So, yeah. The box was pumping for sure. But for a competition, I don't think so. Not with 18 heats in a day, 9 hours. The wind eventually did come up and, yeah, would have been a bit doubted. It's not feasible to run heats over there on that. It's like, it needs to be a pretty special day where the stars align with the time of the event that's left. So I'm thinking kind of round of 16 onwards. And not much event, you know, more days left in the window after that, because it's just hard to get a full day done over there.
Yep, understood. But I do, the dual location thing is interesting. One of our commenters on the site brought that up as well. And it does seem like a fairly, I don't know what the logistics are, but it does seem like a pretty viable option and a pretty fun one for spectators as well, getting to basically watch two locations at once. I don't know how it would work commentary-wise. You guys would have to get creative, but I'm sure you can figure it out. Anyway, last...
Well, it'd be really expensive. You need a lot more broadcast gear and a lot more, like, just behind the scenes, you know, logistical help. But it would take out a day of competition, so you'd save on that end. But I don't know what the numbers actually look like. But yeah, for sure, it would be insane.
All right, so last question. You kind of brought this up, but is there any sense of who will get the wild cards, the season end or the back half of the year wild cards? I think there's one for the men and one for the women, is that right?
Yeah, there's one for the men, and the women's one is a lot more interesting because of who said they're going to take a year off, that being Carissa and Steph.
Oh, that's true.
There's only one to give away in 2025. So, we're just going to have to wait for the news on that one. I haven't got anything there. But for the men, no real news. Obviously, Giachianca will get the seasonal one starting now for the back half of this year. But going into next year, and again, I don't even know for sure that Jiao's been locked in. He just seems the most logical pick to me.
That's true. All right, so before we go, there was one other thing that I heard, and that is that after missing the cut, Sophie McCulloch was one of those surfers who paddled out to the box, and I think you may know more intel here, Stace, but I heard that she jumped off of one and got slammed pretty hard and actually fractured a vertebrae, so it sounds like she's going to be out for a couple of months. That is literally adding injury to insult. So Sophie, we hope that you heal up soon, and we commend you for giving it a crack, because that is what it's all about. And with that, Stacey, should we have a moment of silence for the surfers who have fallen off of the 2024 championship tour?
No, I think we should have a moment of rejoice in the fact that the tour is so well structured these days. There's no time to cry. You wax your board and you come down to Snapper. You win the comp. Then you go to the Fisher concert, celebrate there. And then you get down to Narrabeen and you keep the ball rolling. So, yeah, I think the structure of the tour is amazing. And I think that the opportunity that it offers those people cut is great. Like, they don't have to get back on the full QE. They just go back a level and 6 months you'll be back on. And I'd expect people like Jacob Wilcox to fully do that. Same with Sammy Pupo.
Wow, you are a good pitch man. And also, rest in peace to your Rookie of the Year pick, Jacob Wilcox.
I know. Far out. Smoked. But like these contests, they do go for a long time, and we just saw that in this event. So I'm in support of the cut. As brutal as it may be, and the tears that flow are real, and I do feel them. I feel them quite physically, actually, as they fall onto my shoulder there on the glass. But it's, you know, it's just, man, it's just high-level sport.
I did love the way that you spun it on Seth Moniz, who, like, outwardly criticized the cut. And then you're like, yeah, but isn't it making you surf the best you've surfed all year?
He also just kept telling me that he was just finding good waves. And I'm like, it's not luck. Like, he's very good at finding waves out there. And I think that that needs to be acknowledged, you know. Yeah, I'm not letting these surfers get away with it anymore, Mikey, mate. No more softballs.
All right, well, with that... This podcast is in loving memory of Samuel Poupeau, Ian Gentile, Kai Oibeli, Miguel Poupeau, Cade Mattson, Jacob Wilcox, Frederico Marias, Callum Robson, Eli Hanneman, Kelly Slater, and David Silva. On the women's side, we have Sophie McCulloch, hold on, it's loading, Lakey Peterson, Luana Silva, Sally Fitzgibbons, Isabella Nichols, India Robinson, and Alyssa Spencer. May you rest in peace or win at Snapper. Thank you, as always, for listening to The Drop, and we'll be back this Friday with a typical news edition with Buck and hopefully some friends as well. And we have the Challenger Series coming up, so I think Stace and I will get on quickly to chat about that as well. So, until later this week, over and out.